Echo and Harper Audio present Semicolon, The Past, Present, and Future of a Misunderstood Mark by Cecilia Watson. Read by Pam Ward. A note before we begin. Don't forget to download the accompanying enhancement PDF from your audiobook provider, or go direct to www.harpercollins.com/audio/semicolon. The PDF contains illustrations from the print edition and will be referred to throughout as the enhancement. For my parents, who made sure I always had enough to read. Punctuation is a gentle and unobtrusive art that has long been one of the misfortunes of man. For about 300 years it has been harassing him and bewildering him with its quiet contrariness, and no amount of usage seems to make him grow in familiarity with the art. Power of points. Punctuation that upset work of Solon's. Boston Daily Globe, January 20, 1901. Introduction. Love, Hate, and Semicolons. "The semicolon has become so hateful to me," confessed Paul Robinson in a New Republic essay, "that I feel almost morally compromised when I use it." When Robinson, a humanities professor at Stanford, sees a dot balanced over a comma, he's filled with exasperation. Robinson is perhaps the semicolon's most devoted foe, but he's hardly its only modern detractor. Novelists from George Orwell to Donald Barthelme have discoursed on its ugliness or irrelevance or both. Kurt Vonnegut was unequivocal in his last book, advising writers, "Do not use semicolons. They are transvestite hermaphrodites, representing absolutely nothing. All they do is show you've been to college." And almost 800,000 people have shared a webcomic that labels the semicolon the most feared punctuation mark on earth. Yet when the Italian humanists invented the semicolon in the 15th century, they conceived of it as an aid to clarity, not, as Professor Robinson now characterizes it, a pretentious mark used chiefly to gloss over an imprecise thought. In the late 1800s, the semicolon was downright trendy, its frequency of use far outstripping that of one of its relatives, the colon. How did the semicolon, once regarded with admiration, come to seem so offensive, so unwieldy, to so many people? Asking this question might seem academic in all the worst ways. What practical value could there be in mulling punctuation, and in particular its history, when we have efficiently slim guidebooks like Strunk and White's The Elements of Style, and thick reference volumes like The Chicago Manual of Style to set straight our misplaced colons and commas? We have rules for this sort of thing. But rule-based punctuation guides are a relatively recent invention. Prior to the 1800s, the majority of grammarians and scholars advocated personal taste and judgment as a guide to punctuating, or pointing, a text. The Scottish Enlightenment philosopher George Campbell, writing the same year the Declaration of Independence was signed, argued that language is purely a species of fashion. It is not the business of grammar, as some critics seem preposterously to imagine, to give law to the fashions which regulate our speech. But what Campbell and most of his contemporaries thought was a preposterous idea soon became a commonplace principle. As the 1700s drew to a close, new grammar books began to espouse systems of rules that were purportedly derived from logic. In these new books, grammarians didn't hesitate to impugn the grammar of writers traditionally considered great stylists.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?